Shabbat Shalom. Of all of the responses to my congregational letter in reaction to the president's executive order on immigration, there is one that I have yet to hear. Not in the dozens of emails I received, not in the phone calls, not in the staff discussions, not in the conversations with synagogue leadership, not in the hallways of this building or even the checkout counters in the supermarket. There's one response that I expected that is yet to be spoken, at least to me. For those of you not on our congregational mailing list, this past week, I, along with my colleagues, sent the community a strongly worded letter joining the arms of the conservative movement in condemning President Trump's executive order banning immigration from 7 countries, suspending refugee admissions from all countries, and dramatically reducing the number of refugees the states will ultimately accept. I began the letter as follows. To be an American Jew is to stand heir to the 2 greatest immigrant traditions on record. From our ancient migrations to the pogrom-induced tenements of the Lower East Side, from the exodus of Soviet Jewry to the rescue of Ethiopian Jewry, we know ourselves to be a people of displaced immigrants. Our self-awareness serves not merely for the purpose of self-knowledge, but is meant to be leveraged towards an impact beyond the boundaries of our people. To be a Jew is to have a reflexive empathy, so that no matter what our own comfort level may be, when we see another in the displaced condition that was once ours, muscle memory kicks in, we identify with that other, we are prompted to compassion, and most importantly, we are impelled towards acts of welcoming and hospitality. And it is because, I went on to explain, that these values lie at the very foundation of our self-understanding, this executive order stands in conflict with our value system as both Americans and as Jews. The fact that so many responded so warmly to the letter, expressing pride in the synagogue and a readiness to act, I must admit, while not a surprise, was altogether heartening. The fact that more than a few responded with thoughtful, but thankfully never ad hominem criticism, was also to be expected. Some objections were on matters of substance. Rabbi, in this day and age, knowing what is going on in Europe and even here in the States, what about the security risks? What about ISIS? What about the terrorists? Is not there a moral imperative to keep our country safe? Other objections were on matters of style. Rabbi, the synagogue is no place to get political. To call on congregants to speak out, advocate, commit their resources towards political causes is beyond the purview of your pulpit. While time has not permitted me to respond to all the comments and emails, support or dissent, I'm grateful for the dignified conversation, a conversation to be continued today after Kiddush at 1 o'clock today. But what nobody picked up, not even my wife, was a simple observation that the argument I made, the words that I used, I wrote long before this week's letter. Nobody said, Rabbi, you've already said that. The entire paragraph I just read, with only minor emendations for reasons of syntax, I said verbatim in November of 2015. The value stated in that letter, the moral imperative to be drawn from the Jewish historical experience, the policy implications I advocated for in regard to refugees, none of it, not one word, was either novel nor new. And it's because my words in 2015 came and went without comment, and it's because the unoriginality of my most recent letter was greeted with such comment that I'm compelled to share with you 2 inescapable conclusions. First, and most painfully, you people don't read my sermons as closely as I would hope. I deliver them in shul, I live stream them every week, we put them on the web, on emails, on Facebook and podcasts, even publish a book of them every year, like a tree that falls in the woods when nobody's around. The innermost yearnings of my soul and hopes for the Jewish people, just another casualty of the information age. But the second and more simple and more serious conclusion, and it's on this point that I want to focus upon, is that because my views quite literally have not changed one iota from that moment to this, from the prior administration to the present one, that I can say with clarity of mind and peace at heart that it is not I who has changed, but the world that has changed. I'm reminded of Groucho Marx's famous quip, "Those are my principles, and if you don't like them, well, I have others." If being political means to hold views that are in sync with one administration but not in sync with another, then yes, I stand guilty as charged. I am political, though I would rather choose to use the word principled. You may agree or disagree with my principles, but they are not, if you follow my logic, politically motivated. They are principles only made interesting because of late, the last 2 weeks to be precise, they have been brought into relief by an administration that would ask us to hold otherwise. So at risk of repeating what I've already said multiple times and delivering a dead men don't wear plaid pastiche sort of sermon, a movie reference that perhaps only the father of our bat mitzvah understands, allow me to restate my principles. First, as an American, July 5th, 2008, my very first Shabbat here at Park Avenue, in a sermon devoted to Independence Day weekend, I explained how our Puritan predecessors, that ragtag group of religious dissenters, went on their errand into the wilderness, crossing the ocean literally and figuratively like ancient Israel itself in order to worship God as they saw fit. From John Winthrop's stated hope on the Arbella to establish a city on the hill, to the second paragraph of the Declaration affirming all men to be created equal, from Emma Lazarus's words of welcome inscribed on the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty, to the letters etched on every penny, e pluribus unum, out of many one, from Horace Callan's symphonic vision of American pluralism, to Oscar Hanlon's characterization of American history to be a history of immigrants, our national identity, our collective imagination, the premise and promise of America, is to be a haven for those seeking refuge and the unalienable right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. The arc is not smooth. It has come in fits and starts more than once in the St. Louis or internment camps. We've fallen short of this American dream. But the hope that not only is this land my land, but also your land, a land made for you and me, that is the song. That is the dream and vision at the foundation stone of our very country. And as for being Jewish and welcoming the stranger, well, I don't even know where to begin. Not once, not twice, no less than 36 times does the Torah teach us of our obligation to the stranger to welcome, love, and protect the stranger. Why? Because we were once strangers in a strange land. It's not just that this morning's Torah reading relates the narrative of our own exodus, but it legislates how that experience is to be encoded into our ongoing Jewish DNA. The hurried manner, staff in hand, in which the paschal sacrifice must be eaten, the matzah that didn't have time to rise, to remember that you left Egypt with little more than the clothes on your back. We were the first refugees, an institution for all time passed down from generation to generation that no matter a Jew's present station in life, one never forgets, all the more so given the last 2,000 years of Jewish history, to act with empathy and compassion for those similarly seeking refuge. And it is because I do believe that these values lie at the core of who we are, both as Americans and as Jews, that I believe the presidential order stands in conflict with our values. Do I have concerns about the safety and security of Americans? Of course I do. The first duty of government is to protect its citizens. But to suggest that such concerns preclude one from the right to object to a policy that stands in such open breach with a host of other values is to abdicate our rightful place in the public square. Am I concerned that some on the political left protesting most loudly at airports and otherwise are drawing intellectually empty and morally spurious equivalences between Israel's security needs and this administration's policies? Of course I am. But then again, to choose not to speak out because my coalition partners share but some, but not all of my views, is a response that strikes me as lacking in a certain moral courage and creativity. Jews must reject the false choice between advocating for our parochial interests and speaking out on behalf of the needs of others, be it Abraham arguing with God on behalf of Sodom and Gomorrah, or Jonah pleading with the Ninevites to repent of their ways. Our spiritual heroes have always been committed both to the well-being of our people and the condition of a wider humanity. It's not either or, it's both and. As the motto of HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, goes, we used to take refugees because they were Jewish. Now we take them because we're Jewish. There's a story, a true story, told of a turn of a century rabbi of some small fame, Rabbi Henry Cohen of Galveston, Texas. As many of you may know, Galveston was a principal port of entry for the flood of immigration into the United States from Russia and Eastern Europe. Among the immigrants was a certain Russian who immediately upon arrival to the States was arrested. An extradition order had been issued at the request of the Tsarist government. Hearing of the man's predicament, Rabbi Cohen visited the prisoner and became convinced that he was not a criminal but entitled to political asylum. He intervened with the authorities but lost his appeal on behalf of the man. Making the man's case his own, Cohen took the case to the courts, to the governor, all with the same negative effect. Finally, he sought an interview with President William Howard Taft. After many frustrations, he was granted an appointment with the president in which he pleaded the case of the prisoner. Taft listened and then shook his head. "I'm sorry, Rabbi. Much as I admire the way you Jews stick together, trying to help one another, I cannot see any reason for intervening." "Jew," said the rabbi. "Who said he was a Jew? He's a Russian Christian." "A Christian," echoed the president. "But why are you concerning yourself with him?" "He's a human being, isn't he?" replied the rabbi. And so it happened that the president ordered the cancellation of the extradition order. To be an American Jew is to stand heir to the two greatest immigrant traditions on record. When we see another in the displaced condition that was once ours, muscle memory kicks in. We identify with that other, we're prompted to compassion and impelled towards acts of welcoming and hospitality. Those are my principles, and I'm sticking to them. The measure of our principles, after all, is never found in moments of repose, but rather the degree to which we hold fast to them when they are tested. Ours is a time of such testing, so let us hold fast to who we are, reach out to those in need, and never, ever forget the founding premise and enduring promise of what it means to have once been a stranger in a strange land. Shabbat Shalom.